We acknowledge the people of Ngāi-Tahu Iwi, of Te Wai Pōnamu, Aotearoa, who welcomed Alone Australia onto their land. And we acknowledge the Cammeraygal people as the traditional owners of the land we're recording on. We pay deepest respect to First Nations elders, past and present, and all First Nations people.
Welcome to the Alone Australia podcast. I'm Darren Mara.
I'm Gina Chick, the winner of Alone Australia Season 1. And after just watching the final episode of Season 2, I'm emotionally exhausted but also super excited to chat to the winner.
I know, I can't wait. But before we do, I'd love to get your thoughts, Gina, on the finale and the season as a whole. Last one standing. I almost can't believe it. I feel like I've been on a roller coaster journey watching this. I can't understand how the participants must feel. Christoph, the ultimate winner, the first time the finale has kind of gone down like this.
Yeah.
Three participants at the end and then Christoph's partner not being able to be there. What an interesting way to end the season.
Yeah, I must admit when I was watching it and then seeing Susan tap and think, okay, well, Christoph's won. But then they've done a med check, obviously, because all three of them were very much in deep starvation. So yeah. I can understand why they'd be doing very frequent med checks. But then he's failed the med check, you know, and then he's being medically extracted before his partner can get there. And I don't think that's ever happened.
So how does it work with the med checks? I mean, would that have been pre-scheduled or do you think because they were in such a starvation mode, they'd just be doing them regularly and it just happened to happen then?
It's all very mysterious with the med checks. It's not like there's a regular schedule, but they get more frequent as people get more medically challenged. Mm. And just seeing the state of starvation that all three of them were in, it isn't surprising to me that there was a med check, probably to make sure that he was going to be able to last until she got there, and then he was medically extracted.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about Christoph winning? I mean, obviously we're all happy for Christoph.
Absolutely.
But I mean, is that how you saw it playing out?
I didn't see it playing out. When it came down to the last three, I thought that it could have gone any way. Like if Andreas had gotten any kind of game, I think he would have taken the other two. That would have given him the lift that he needed. Yeah, and so Susan, I thought, was in really good physical shape, even though it turns out she went to emergency in the reunion show. Mm. But she had so much vitality showing when they came to get her. And then Christoph, yeah, he was the last one. He literally was the last one standing by the skin of his teeth.
I found it difficult to see how much Andreas was sort of beating up on himself.
Oh, I know.
You know, I don't think this diminished him at all in the season at all. But he's, you know, such an impressive, strong man who was going out and, you know, seizing the game by its teeth and just, you know, inventive and creative and active and on the front foot. And then he sort of, the psychological game just started to eat away at him and he was, by the end, it seemed like he was looking back on the last 50-odd days as a failure.
That's right, because he said that if he crumbled and left, it would be for nothing.
Yeah.
That hurt my heart hearing that, because what he did in that is something that 99.99999% of the people watching could never do. And what he did was absolutely incredible. And I think the thing that I really got from Andreas's journey was how much grit he has and how much that willpower can take him through. And as when we were watching the episode together, I said that he's the sort of guy who if he fell down a crevasse on a high mountain, he would like pull himself out of it and crawl with a broken leg back to camp.
Yeah, or
like
chop his arm off and get out of
there. Yeah, he's got that kind of grit. And I think it's also really interesting to see the difference between like a real grit mentality, which can get you so far, as opposed to the gratitude mentality that Susan had. Like right at the end, she was shining with gratitude and seeing how peacefully she left on her own terms.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. That was such a beautiful exit from the season. You know, she had her ceremony by the fire. She seemed really ready to go.
Yeah. And the thing I saw with Susan was that she probably up there with the participants was able to be with her emotions. You know, she was talking about how emotionally labile she was and then I've got anger here and I've got sadness here. But she was able to be with those emotions so then they would blow through. And what we saw at the end with her beautiful exit was what I saw as deep, deep, deep connection to herself and to the land, to the point where she didn't feel separate from it. Mm. And her departure was like farewelling a lover. With that beautiful gratitude that you get when it's like the end of a beautiful love affair.
Particularly in the final episode, as we saw, like she was going through a degree of sort of psychological torment, with everything going on physically and all the rest of it. I guess it would be doubly important in that situation to leave on a positive and to kind of reset your psychology before departing that, what is a beautiful location.
Yeah, although that's easy for us to say when we're watching. When you're out there, there's not much that at this point is like, okay, well, I need to do it this way. At this point, they're hanging on by their fingernails, and what we see is their essential nature shining through. Mm. And her essential nature, I think, is one that is in deep gratitude a lot of the time.
Somehow in all this, you've also become a winner, or you've remained a winner too, because your record wasn't broken. So you did 67 days.
That's right. Yes.
Still a bit proud of yourself?
I am a little bit proud of myself, yeah. So it's been really interesting because I've noticed this quite shallow part of myself that's like, yes, I want them to do well. I want them to do great, but not more than 67 days. And so I'm really proud of everybody, and I'm also kind of glad my record still stands. Mind you, there's only 2 seasons, so I'm sure it'll topple next time.
When I was getting pumped up for this season and I kept seeing the SBS Lone Australia billboards everywhere, and it's got the image of the woman with the bow on her back.
Yes.
The bow and arrow. I was like, oh, my God, they're taking bows and arrows out there. It's going to be epic.
I know.
But in the end, like, no one caught a deer the whole series. Like, why did no one catch a deer?
When Andreas came in, he gave us some great insight into what it takes to hunt with these primitive bows, with a recurve bow. It's very different to the compound bow. With the recurve bow, you need to be able to draw the bow and hold it and release very quickly. You don't have the strength, whereas with a compound bow, you can actually hold for ages. So what that means is you have to get very close to the game to be able to, when you see it, be able to draw and shoot. So that's one thing. But another thing is that hunting is actually really, really difficult. Mm. Hunting with a bow is really difficult. You have to have camo. You have to camouflage your scent. You have to understand the animal. You have to track the animal. You have to know how the animal's behaving. You have to be able to stalk up on it very, very close without it noticing you. And it's prey, so it's designed to, like, pick up on every threat. And add to that, you're cold, you're wet, you're malnourished, and you don't know if there's any game in the area. I mean, it's amazing, I think, in any of the Alone series that they catch anything with a bow.
Well, we saw how weak and emaciated Andreas was in the finale. When he went out for that, like, 2-hour venture and he brought the bow with him, I was like, could he even use it if he saw a deer? Like, he was so weak. How long would he have to stand there and hold it back?
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing with Andreas, his muscle memory would be so, well embedded that I reckon he could, by sheer force of will, pull the bow, like some kind of like Harry Potter telepathy thing to get it. But, yeah, I think at that point, then if you haven't caught something, then you're probably not going to. It's always a really interesting question, I think, with when bows and arrows are allowed. Like in season 1, we weren't allowed to have a bow and arrow, and that kind of made things easy in a way because it wasn't an option. Mm. But for the people who are trained in archery, to then have the option of a bow and arrow, it's really easy to go, oh, my goodness, I'm going to take it and I'm going to get a moose, or I'm going to get a deer or whatever. But if you look at all of the Northern Hemisphere seasons of Alone, the amount of people who actually really get game with a bow and arrow is very, very small. And it's then if you choose that bow and arrow, you've taken away another choice that might have resulted in more reliable food.
Would you have taken one? If you were in this season, would you have opted to take one?
Oh, probably.
So it's tempting. That's right. It's tempting, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, because the carrot that comes with the bow and arrow is a deer. Yeah. It's a whole deer. It's like, and those things are big. That's it. You get a deer and you're there for a year kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would have thought about it. The other thing that you don't know what the hunting restrictions are going to be until you get to boot camp.
Really?
Yeah. So it's not like it's like, okay, there's bow and arrow, but you're not going to be able to do this, 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 and this. It's like there's a bow and arrow.
Because you don't know where you're going.
We don't know where you're going. Oh, yeah. And you don't know what the hunting restrictions are going to be. So it's kind of like a bit of a roll of the dice. Yes, I'll take the bow and arrow, but then when I get out there, they learn that they can't hunt at night.
Mm. It's very funny that Andreas ended up getting best hunter. And he
did it with a shovel.
Did it with a shovel, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. So that shovel was actually incredibly practical in terms of it being a fantastic whomping weapon that was more useful than a bow and arrow.
It sort of ended up like the Hunger Games there with our three participants. What are your thoughts on the strategy of just trying to cope without food and limiting activity? Not even necessarily in the last stages of time out there, but, just as an overall strategy.
So basically you mean just like get fat, get there and hibernate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that versus getting on the front foot and more of an Andreas sort of approach?
There's definitely merit in both. And I think we saw in one of the seasons in the Northern Hemisphere, there was a guy, and I can't remember his name, and he was a big guy, and he came in with the attitude of, I'm not burning any calories. That's it. That's his whole strategy. He built his shelter, and then he would calculate the calories that it would take to even go down to the water to get drink. Mm. And he just did nothing, and he went out of his gourd. Mm. He was so bored. He was so in his own head. There was nothing for him to distract himself from what was going on, and he ended up tapping out. Mm. And I think that in retrospect, it's very easy with something like this to say, I would just do that. I would just hide out and not burn calories. But as we saw in this season, every single one of the participants, they were all creating things mm-hmm. as part of their mental health plan. Mm-hmm. And that's not to be overlooked because we live in a culture of distraction. Whenever we start to feel anything in our culture, there's something that we can use to distract ourselves. But once we get out there in this particular challenge, there's nothing. It's just us. Mm. There's nothing to pull us out of what we're feeling and thinking. And so for a lot of the participants, this is the first time they've really spent this much time on their own. And it's amazing what comes up. We saw with Tamika's PTSD, in all the seasons we see people wrestling with their inner demons and we definitely see this time. So I think that as a strategy, the hunker down and make like a bear and hibernate, that I don't think is going to take off.
Mm. Yeah, just on that wrestling with your inner demons, it really puts into context the nature of life in the busy world that we live and the sort of multitude of distractions that we all face that mean that whatever skeletons we've got or whatever demons we've got, mm-hmm. it's easy to bury them.
Absolutely.
And then when you're out there just on your own, it's like it's just you and the wilderness and whatever psychological baggage you bring in with you.
And we all have it. And so that's why when we're watching from our nice comfy lounge rooms, when we've been distracting ourselves all day with all of the things that we've got and eating our food and we're not in that state, it's very hard to relate to what people are going through out there and how challenging those mental stories are. And we see it with Andreas and his very strong story about failure. And we see it with everybody, really. But I find it really beautifully educational, the masterclass of Alone, in showing how once we do put ourselves into these situations and, all of the buried demons come out to play, what resilience tools and strengths people have to be with that. And we get to see that in real time. And I think it's an absolutely beautiful thing about this franchise, this series, is that we really get to see our own internal processes magnified in these participants. And that's part of the generosity of their gift to us.
Yeah, it is. I find myself every episode having a few minutes where I'm pondering what the philosophical lessons are of this experiment. Mm. And I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it's taking time away and pondering whatever it is that is gnawing away at you in the back of your mind and I suppose paying respect to that but also finding the tools of resilience to deal with it and move on.
I think another thing about this particular show and something that I really want to acknowledge in every single participant is every single person went to the absolute depths of themselves, whether they were there for 2 days, 3 days, 63 days, 64 days. Everybody does the best with what they have, and everybody meets these really crunchy parts of themselves. And what we see is in all of the participants, how much grace they show in the face of that. And I really want to acknowledge everybody's courage and their resilience and their honesty and their self-compassion and also their humility. Nature breaks everybody in the end, everybody, in one way or another. And in the face of that, this crop of participants, I think, has just shown such exquisite human beauty.
Mm. Well, speaking of humility, I think Christoph was very humble in his victory, and we have the privilege of speaking to him right now. So some saw it coming. A lot of people didn't see it coming, but in an extremely exciting finale, which started with three participants remaining, Christoph has been crowned the winner of Alone Australia Season 2, and we're all very, very, very excited for him, for what that means, and excited to hear more from him right now. Thank you so much for joining us, Christoph. How is it to not have to keep this damn secret anymore?
It's nice to be able to tell people, yeah, we did it. It's exciting, and it was nice to have everyone around to watch the finale together. And yeah, this morning my phone's just been blowing up with people going, well done, congratulations, you stuck it out. Yeah, it's nice.
Did you have any moments in the last however long it's been since you got out where you nearly blew it, when you nearly told someone?
No, I've been able to keep my cards pretty close to my chest.
So how's it been over the last like 2.5 months, and particularly in that finale, watching yourself back? I mean, toward the end there, everyone was looking pretty dire physically, mentally. I mean, how have you reflected on that, seeing yourself in those states?
Watching it back, I'm pretty glad that the doctor pulled me out when he did. I don't know how much longer I could have gone, and I probably would have just kept pushing until I fell over and actually hurt myself. So it was definitely the right move for it to happen when it happened. At the time, I was probably still in the mental state going, yep, I can keep doing this, I can keep doing this. But watching it back, yeah, it was definitely a good idea to pull me out when they did.
And how has Erin felt watching your journey? And again, especially in the last, you know, weeks there, when you were physically looking like Alone was taking its toll.
Well, she's been super supportive, the odd tear here and there. And it was nice to cuddle up on the couch yesterday and just watch it together. And yeah, she's been super supportive and absolutely amazing the whole way through.
And when you saw again that moment where she came to surprise you, did you shed a tear?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was an emotional moment.
Yeah, I bet you that's a moment that'll live forever in your memory. I mean, a lifetime achievement.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It still hasn't sunk in. I mean, it's crazy. What an experience.
That's an interesting thing about the delay between when you finish the season and then when all this sort of publicity starts to happen. Is there like a delayed sort of like realization of what's happened because of that lag time between when you actually got out of there, out of New Zealand, and to this moment?
Yeah, it was kind of strange because we all left New Zealand, and then we were all told, don't talk about it, nothing's happened, just keep quiet. And it was back to work as though nothing had happened, and suddenly this TV show starts up and go, oh yeah, I remember that. And then we're watching it, it's like, wow, I can't remember that. Well, I remember that. Oh yeah, I remember that.
You sort of have to, you'd have to go into like denial immediately after having gone through potentially the most traumatic physically and psychological thing you've ever done in your life.
Oh, I wouldn't call it traumatic. It was therapeutic.
it's almost like, you know, the Jedi, this is not the Alone you were part of. I had to kind of hypnotize myself, and I put it in a box somewhere down deep where I couldn't even find it. I had to basically tell myself that it just to forget it. How did you actually keep the secret?
I was probably lucky in the fact that I only work with one other person, so going to work wasn't an issue, wasn't really spilling the beans there. And then the people that asked me, what were you doing? I said, oh, I was away with work.
Have you had any members of the public come up to you yet, recognizing you, and not just after winning it, but throughout the whole season?
I've only had one person recognize me, and that's one of my neighbors, and they only recognize me because of the street.
I think that might change now. Yeah. I think you might get a little bit more attention. When you're out there, so this is the first time in all of the seasons in Alone, this is the first time we've seen a finale go down like this, where somebody tapped out, then there's the med check, you were medically extracted before Erin could actually get to you. Did you have any idea how close it was when you were out there?
Absolutely no idea. I was thinking I'm probably going to be the first person pulled.
But, yeah. I mean, you were so positive out there too. I mean, that's kind of a contradiction to how you seemed on camera.
But at boot camp, after meeting all the other contestants, I mean, they were all such incredibly skilled and amazingly competent outdoors people. I thought, I'm just going to treat this like a holiday. I'm going to go out, I'm going to have fun, and then once I can't do it anymore, I'll get pulled and I'll have the win because I got this trip to New Zealand and it's going to be amazing. The thought of winning was never something I even considered.
So did you think that everybody was still out there?
I was thinking there'd still be the vast majority of people.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And it was down to three of you.
Did you have a chance to chat to Susan for the reunion show about, you know, the circumstances of her tapping and, you know, had she waited another 24 hours, the whole thing would have ended very differently.
Yeah, but she also said that she ended up in the emergency department that night. So it was, I think she made the right call as well.
After you got out, did you have to have any medical attention like that?
So it took about 3 days for my vision to come back to normal. I had a bit of neuropathy in my legs that didn't come back until I was probably a couple months later. And then it was about 3 months before I was back at full strength and at work.
What was going on with your vision?
Oh, because I wasn't sleeping in those last few weeks. I was getting such little sleep. It was almost like I was drunk without the benefit of having a few drinks.
And with that not sleeping, did you have the hamsters going around and around, or was it just physical discomfort? Like, what was going through you when you were having those incredibly long nights without sleep?
It was just the hamsters going and just random thoughts about random things, and just couldn't switch the brain off and just kept going and going and going.
And were there any stories that just kept coming back night after night, or did you have a whole new movie?
Oh, it was a new movie every time.
Okay.
Never a dull moment.
But without the popcorn?
Without the popcorn and Good. Without the food.
And the beer.
Yeah.
I'd love to know more about your incredible shelter, Christoph. In the reunion show, we saw some of the other participants say that if they could have had anyone else's shelter, they would have taken your shelter. Just like talk us through it. Like, what was your idea? Why that particular shelter, that style?
It sort of came to be as time progressed, because originally when I got onto the land, I was like, I need to quickly set up just a quick shelter which will protect me from the weather. So I did that, and then I spent the next couple of days just walking around scouting a location where I could set up a more permanent shelter. But I thought, okay, there's probably going to be a bit of rain coming, so I should at least make a back wall on this temporary shelter just to protect myself. And that took about 3 days to do. And by the end of that, I was like, you know what? I've put too much effort into this. I'm not moving. We'll just stay here. And then we only were allowed to use certain timbers or a certain allotment of timber. So I pretty much used that all on the back wall. And then I thought, okay, so we're going to have to improvise something different. And there was all this deadfall everywhere. So it was literally just make walls out of the deadfall, and they were thick. They insulated the place and it was comfortable and safe and warm. And I'd read about doing these sort of shelters before, but I've never actually made one. So it was a really fun experience just to go through it. And if you can see, some of the walls are a little bit not quite right. And then the next wall that I built was a little bit better. And then by the end, when I built the front walls, they were solid and straight and neat. So it was a good little learning experience, and it was warm in that shelter, like really warm. It got to the point where there was water condensing on the inside of the tarp and then dripping down on my bed and stuff, which is the reason why I started insulating the roof, just to create that little buffer.
And your ingenuity wasn't just apparent in your shelter. Like, you made a whole bunch of really cool stuff. Can you just run us through the list of your projects when you're out there?
Okay. Well, you saw the spinning wheel, you saw the rope. A lot of that rope got actually used on the shelter. What else did we do? We made some spoons, we made some forks, we made some spatulas, you know, all in anticipation for catching that fish, which never came. Made a comb because I was getting annoyed with having to rake all the knots out of my hair. So it was, you know what, just make a comb. And that worked. Made the boats to try and catch the fish. I was in the process of making like a little mandolin when I got pulled. I was toying with the idea of building a kite to try and take the bait out over the water. Didn't get around to that one though. Yeah, it was a lot of projects.
What were you most proud of the things that we didn't get to see?
My comb.
Well, we got to see it.
We had one shot of you. Yeah.
In the reunion. Finale. Was it in the reunion or was it in the finale? But anyway, we did get to see your comb and it looked like it was really doing the job too.
Yeah.
It looked
like it was store-bought. Yeah, so watching you out there, your positivity was effusive, even sort of in the dying moments of the finale. You seemed to enjoy the aloneness, so to speak. Certainly, I'd say more than anyone else out there on camera, at least from what I saw. Mm. Have you ever spent that long by yourself in isolation before? And how was it for you? Was it actually as we saw it?
So I think the longest time that I spent alone would have been during the lockdowns, but even that wasn't anywhere near as long as that. And that was really good as well. It was it gave me a chance to recharge the spoons, got a few projects done around the house, and yeah, it's like being alone is good. It gives me just time to reflect, be myself, be comfortable, and then back to society.
Did you have any mishaps while you're out there?
Yeah. I made a fly fishing rod and I plaited, did a tapered line for it and out of the inner cord of the paracord, and then had the leader done out of just the monofilament, and I was tying the flies. After combing my hair, I actually would keep the hair and tie the flies with that. And I remember tying the last knot on this fly, and I just pulled it a little bit tight and it just sank the hook straight in the top of my thumb.
Oh. And were they barbed hooks?
Yeah.
So the barb was in?
Yeah.
How did you get it out?
I grabbed my Leatherman and literally just ripped it out.
Whoa. Oh, and so now then you had a wound in the end of your thumb.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be very annoying.
How far into
the meat,
the show was it? Well, how far into the meat was it? And how many days in did that happen?
That probably would have been about 2 weeks in. And it's the first time I've ever done it. And I just sat there going, you Muppet, you Muppet.
How did you dress it? How did you like deal with it?
I pulled it out, put a Band-Aid over it. And then from then on, I was in gloves for the rest of the show.
Wow. Okay.
There you go. Tell us about your diet or lack thereof out there. I mean, what were you eating? How were you surviving?
So let's see. I was eating a lot of those weeds that you guys saw because the water in the lake would sort of rise and fall. That's why I had the sticks in the beach just to measure where it is. And then as it falls, I'd go for a wander along the beach. And this stuff is everywhere. Every fish tank has it. And if you put it in a lake or something, it'll just spread and it goes everywhere. It tastes horrible. But it's food. So I'd be picking up that by the handful. There was the bracken bush. I found some, I think it's swamp dock, and you can eat the leaves and you can also eat the seeds from that. That one wasn't too bad. It tastes a bit like oats.
Yeah, quite a few micronutrients in that. Sounds like there was a lot of, like you were getting, like Susan, I guess, like a lot of greens from foraging, just no protein.
Yeah.
Did you eat any like beetles or lizards or anything like that?
Unfortunately not. It was, we weren't allowed to.
Oh, wow. So it was fish or nothing?
Yeah.
And no fish?
Did you catch a lot of eels? And had to,
yeah.
Had to
yeah. You could see I was getting a bit frustrated after a while with that rage.
Rage against the dying, the not dying of the eels. How many eels did you get?
I think it was 6 or 7 by the time that I went, yeah, I'm done with this for now. And then we had all the other wildlife coming through the camp as well. I had this weka that would sort of walk in and around my camp and ride up to me, and then it would go nosing inside my shelter and be like, oh, you're so lucky I can't turn you into chicken nuggets. And then we have these big pigeons, like these big native pigeons that would sit in the trees, and they'd be like maybe 4 or 5 meters away. You could literally throw a rock at them and knock them out of a tree if you wanted to. And they were plump and delicious looking. And yeah, by the end I was craving chicken nuggets.
So were you allowed to throw rocks at things?
We weren't told we weren't allowed to.
Okay. So we weren't allowed to have any projectiles at all, and we had to be, like, hanging on to anything that we hit with. But, yeah, the rules are different in every country. So
I know that there were no projectiles at night.
At night. Mm.
Mm. So with no protein, your body's going to go through a lot of change over those 64 days.
Yeah.
Talk us through that physical... I was going to say evolution, but it's more of a de-evolution, really.
Devolution.
Talk us through how your body changed throughout the show.
So the hunger pains were the first thing, and I think the day 4 was probably the hardest day that I had out there. That's when they were the strongest. And then over time, that slowly started to dissipate. I found that the energy levels that I had just dropped very quickly, and I was sort of operating at about 40% and sort of just moving slowly and just taking it easy. I don't think I had starvation brain, but at the same time, I'd need someone else out there monitoring me and tell me, no, that looks a bit silly. Why are you doing that? Jeez. And I purposely made certain rules for myself that if I'm starting to feel a little bit woozy, I'm not going to use any knives. I'm not going to use any sharp implements just in case, and just let's sit down and take it easy. I was also finding towards the end, if I moved around too quickly, I'd start to get a little bit woozy as well. So sit down. And yeah, once I've noticed the lack of sleep starting, which was, I was told it was due to a lack of, I think, tryptophan in my system, which is an amino acid, which you can get from things like milk and fish. That was leading to just not sleeping. And then the not sleeping led to the blurred vision, the slurred speech, the stumbling. And it was just, yeah, starting to go downhill from there.
And how much weight did you lose while you were out there?
I think it was about 30 kilos in the end.
Whoa.
So what was your starting weight and your finishing weight?
I went in at 114, and Jesus. I think I was 83 when I came out.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow, that's a lot.
How much had you sort of stacked on for the show?
I'm normally around about 103 kilos, so it would have been about 10 kilos.
Mm. Right. Wow. And so... in the final moments when the you had the med check, just talk us through sort of where you're at physically there, because I mean obviously they were about to extract you if they had to, but what were you feeling physically at the moment at that time?
So I got the notification the med check's coming, and I was sort of setting up for just a nice lazy day, and I had about a half an hour notice, and I was like, oh, I got to set everything up. So I started moving a little bit faster than what I was used to, and that just gave me really intense nausea. And I had my first chunda just before the med check arrived, and I was like, oh, no, I'm going to have to report this, which means they're probably going to pull me. And then so I sat down, and I just waited, and I was like, okay, this is probably it. It's been a fun ride. And then the med check came in, and my blood pressure, I think, was fine, and my heart rate was fine. But they did this thing where it's like follow the thumb with your eyes, and if I'd sort of keep my head still, but I'd look to one side or the other, the nausea would just set in, and that became really intense. Hence at the end, I was like, excuse me one moment. And I had a bit of a chunda.
Yeah, and a lot of a chunda, actually.
Yeah. Mm. And at that point, they said, yeah, I think it's probably better that we take you out.
Wow.
Yeah, when they delivered the news to you that you were, in fact, the last person standing, you sort of, it was like a mixture of disbelief on your face, but also like the information hadn't really sort of processed. You were like, oh, okay, cool. it was an interesting scenario to observe.
I still don't believe that I was the last person. And at the time I was sitting there just in my head going, okay, I've been pulled. This is it. It's been fun. So to get told that you're the last person, it's like, really?
it's so interesting just seeing that, like, you know, what it takes at that point in starvation brain to even have a thought, to even have a, like, any kind of a coherent thought, and you're given the slap of, like, this is over. Was there any relief? Because you're like, okay, was there relief at that point of having it out of your hands?
Yeah, I didn't want to have the responsibility of pulling myself out, because I wanted to get as much as I possibly could out of this experience. So if I was going to get taken out, it had to be for a medical reason or a win.
And then in the middle of that relief, then they're like, and by the way, and of course they're all wearing masks, so you can't see their faces either. And they're like, this isn't a med check. And you're like, wait, what? And it's just seeing that information sort of come in, and there's the relief of I'm getting pulled out, and then that next, it's like being slapped with one hand and then patted with the other. Did you find that the cognitive dissonance of those two bits of information floating around, did that last for the rest of that day? Or did you kind of land once you're on the boat and everyone's going, yeah, you've won, did it really sink in that you'd won?
I think at that point I was just looking forward to eating something, and the thought of winning was just a distant second thought.
But what was the first thing you ate?
So when I got pulled and they took me to the house, I think I was given a bag of biltong and I destroyed it.
Is that a specifically selected food, or that's just what they had?
I think that's just what they had on hand. And I finished and they were like, oh, do you want anything else? Yeah, can I have some more biltong, please?
Now that you've had some time to breathe after being in New Zealand and now after the finale, I mean, I want to know whether your time out there was sort of different than how you thought it would be.
I didn't go in with any expectations in order to avoid any disappointment. So it was going in with an open mind and not expecting anything, so I could just enjoy the entire experience. So that's a tough one to sort of answer.
What would be the hardest part of this whole experience?
I'd say probably the hardest part of the whole experience was sitting there on the beach and constantly catching eels and then having to throw them back. Overall, like, I loved the storms, I loved the sunshine, I loved seeing all the wildlife. It was just a really, really good experience.
It was evident that throughout the show, you know, how important your partner Erin is to you.
She's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. What was it like getting back to her and settling back, you know, into life?
It was so good. We spend our evenings together on the couch all cuddled up, and then we'll either watch a movie or we'll play some games on the Xbox. I think I was mentioning that I was looking forward to heading back and playing some Fallout with her. And yeah, it's nice. And then we go on adventures together, and we have very niche interests and things, but at the same time we've got a lot of interests that sort of cross over, so we're always learning from each other as well. It's she's my queen.
Aww. Has your relationship changed at all after this experience, or during and after this experience?
I think if anything, it's strengthened it. She's sitting off to the side and smiling and nodding.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You're not looking at the producer, you're looking at Erin.
Yeah.
So have you been on any adventures since coming out? Like, have you gone, right, that's it, now I get to go out and do it my way?
I definitely have more of a calling to get outdoors and do more. So we've got a few adventures lined up, and yeah, we're hoping to get outdoors. I think one of the things I'd love to do, it's on my bucket list, is the Sydney to Hobart yacht race. So if anyone out there needs some crew.
Oh, wow. That's an adventure.
Nice bit of bucket.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. We all, as viewers, have the privilege of learning who you are and learning about you and learning about your neurodiversity. And it was so good to be able to sort of unpack you a little bit in the show. But I'm curious to know if there was anything new that you learned about yourself during this whole big experiment.
Watching myself back on the television, I could see when I'd put the mask on, when I'd take it off, when I'd maybe say something that I'd get a little bit defensive about, and then the coping mechanisms that I use just to keep pushing through. So it was good to watch that and sort of just see myself that way.
And with that knowledge and with that new insight, is there anything that you've been sort of like changing about the way you meet the world or the way you interact with people?
Most definitely. Now that I've basically told the whole world, yep, I'm neurodiverse, this is me. I've got nothing to hide, so I'm just going to be myself from here on out, and you can like it or not. It's up to you.
The winner of this show walks away with $250,000 in their pocket. That's a lot of money, and I understand you have to wait until like now to sort of like get that money. What does that mean for you? That's a lot of cash.
It was never about the money going on this show for me. I just wanted the experience and the holiday. I think we'll go and down to the Lego store after this and buy some Lego and then...
Man, that's a lot of Lego. God.
What? Okay, so what in your bucket list of Lego? What would be like that? You go down there, you've got your, you know, you've got your bankroll now. What's the Lego that you're going to buy? The Millennium Falcon, or like a Formula One car, or what?
Well, Lego just released the Artemis space system, so we're going to go get that because Erin's got the other rocket as well. And when I built her a shelf, I specifically left some space on it for some Lego. So we'll get that, and then we'll start building probably tonight.
You know, that's one of the most romantic things I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's right.
Can we bring Erin in? Is that all right? Okay.
You're such a rogue.
Hi, Erin. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys?
Oh, so good to see your face. So you two are so adorable. It is so beautiful that we get to actually, you know, see you together. And that moment where you sort of like pop up and say, I'm here, seeing Christoph's face then is so beautiful. And something that we were talking about before this, before you guys came on, it's like whenever your name is mentioned, whenever he mentions your name, he just lights up. Mm-hmm. And I think the moments we get to see the most sort of like joy and light shining out of his face is when he mentions you. So do you just want to tell us how you feel about him after this massive, incredible achievement?
I'm so proud of him. Absolutely elated. Like, look, this man brings so much joy to my life, and like he is like every single day, he is the positive guy that you see on the show. Like, I'll come home from uni and he'll be like, oh, hey, babe, like I've made, like, that's actually the second spinning wheel he's made. I came home from uni one day and he had already made one out of like PVC pipe and just like, hey, I made this thing. I was like, oh, okay. Average Tuesday. So, yeah. I'm so proud of him. And I'm just, I cannot wait to see the adventures that he goes on next, because yeah, he's...
The adventures will go on next.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to cry.
His shelter was really cool too. I was so happy to see that.
Yeah, it must have been great too, because no one ever gets to go back, and he got to take you and show you everything. Yeah. So when you went back with him, what was it like to then get the guided tour through his world?
Oh, wow. It was surreal. Like, even as the boat came to his little cove, like, you know, the boat trip took quite a long time, and we get in and the motor stops, and it's just, it felt really real. And I was just like, this is where he's been for 64 days, absolutely alone. And I looked around at this beach and I looked around at the bushes, and I was just like, how did you do this? But it was a beautiful spot. And, you know, you walk through the shrubs and there was this gorgeous tree, and it was like a fairy tale. And this gorgeous little, you know, cabin that he built, it was so beautiful. I got to see his cool rock collection and all the things he made. And yeah, it was amazing.
Look, Erin, so lovely to meet you. Thank you for popping onto our screens and introducing yourself. And Christoph, as I said, such a privilege to watch your journey over the last couple of months. It's been great to see you learn and grow and educate us. And as a city boy, I learned a lot, you know, from you and through your positivity as well. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. And thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And I just like to echo that as well. I've really loved watching your journey. And much as I was, you know, sad when Susan tapped, I was also then so happy because it meant that you won and you really, really deserve it. So congratulations and look forward to seeing what you get up to next.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for joining us for this series of the Alone Australia podcast.
I can't believe it's over. I'm going to miss hanging out with you, Darren, and you out there shouting at the telly and cheering on your favourites.
The series is produced by SBS Audio. That's Caroline Gates, Max Gosford, Joel Supple, Jung Cheng Guo, Sophia Lee and Karen Okuda. Our thanks to Joseph Maxwell, ITV, Alone Australia's executive producer, Rima Dea, and of course, all the participants. And finally, thank you to the people of Ngāi Iwi from Te Waipounamu for sharing their special part of Aotearoa with us through Alone Australia.